Hey everybody, welcome again to F This Movie. My name is Patrick Bromley. I am joined tonight for a discussion of The Amazing Spider-Man by the amazing Eric Asperschlager.
Flip, flip.
I'm not sure what just happened. Did you fall down?
Flipped.
Did you?
I flipped.
I'm not.
I flipped. I'm shooting webs.
Oh, gosh. That's the sound it makes when you shoot webs?
Yeah. It's not a snicked.
Right.
Flip.
Got it. You can find our website at fthismovie.blogspot.com. And you can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/fthismovie. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/fthismovie. Find us in the iTunes store by searching F This Movie. You can listen to us through DVD Verdict by going to dvdverdict.com and clicking on the movie podcast tab at the top of the page. And while you're there, make sure you browse one of the tens of thousands of DVD and Blu-ray reviews, many of which were written by Eric and myself. And click on the Amazon links to support DVD Verdict and the fine, fine writers there. And you can always email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. If you have not already done so and you live in or near Chicago, make sure you get your tickets for the special F This Movie screening of Die Hard taking place August 2nd at 7:30 p.m. Go to fthismovie.blogspot.com for details. I will be there. I've never seen Die Hard in a theater. I'm super excited.
I'm super jealous.
Yeah, sorry about that.
No, it's fine. You can't cater to us weird rural folks.
That's right. Eric, have you seen anything good lately?
I have. I have seen a few good things. A couple Netflix movies found by browsing on the internet. I'd never heard of them before, so I want to see if you have.
All right.
This might be new to you. The first one, I think I mentioned to you in an email, called Red, White, and Blue.
Yes, I added it to my queue. I have not yet watched it.
Yeah, that's fine. And I'll be pretty vague about it because one of the joys of this movie are kind of the twists and turns. But it's a thriller slash horror movie directed by someone named Simon Rumley, shot in Texas, in the Austin area, I think, and the whole movie takes place there. And it's basically the story about these characters and how their lives intersect. The main character is a woman, I think her name is Erica, who basically just hops around from bar to bar sleeping with guys. And then she meets another guy at the boarding house where she lives. And although she's initially standoffish, they form a friendship. And then a lot of crazy stuff happens from there. So I'll kind of leave it at that. Watching it, it reminded me in some ways of The Woman, which I know is a movie that you and I both enjoy.
Yeah.
Lucky McKee's one. Not necessarily in subject matter or plot, but just both in the way that it builds up to insanity.
Okay.
And also in the way that it for all the horrific stuff that it shows or describes in detail, there's a lot that's left kind of ambiguous.
Okay.
Which I think works to the film's credit. The pacing's a little weird, and some of the shifts are abrupt, but I think it's definitely worth checking out. So red, white, and blue.
I gotta say, I clearly missed an opportunity to watch the movie on the 4th of July.
Yeah, I don't know that it necessarily is thematic in that way.
It sounds like the most patriotic movie since Independence Day.
Oh,
I mean, that's how it sounds.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. Yes, it is.
Yeah, okay.
Obviously. There are fireworks at the end.
Hey!
Not literally. I'm not really sure what the red, white, and blue refers to. I think it refers to the colors in Texas's state flag.
Oh. Well, that's
I a could
cheat.
Be wrong about
yeah,
it.
All
or
right.
Maybe it's, I don't know, it's probably some thematic subtlety that I, you know, missed because I'm an idiot. And then the other movie that I checked out, I just watched today. It's a comedy called Punching the Clown.
I've heard of it. I think possibly just by browsing Netflix.
Yeah, that's where I saw it. It's semi-biographical tale of a musician, a real kind of comedy musician named Henry Phillips, who has this sort of folk guitar style, but his songs are all semi-filthy and very funny. And it's kind of the story of this character version of him going to Los Angeles and trying to hit it big, and of course running into all of the phonies and duplicitous, you know, record execs and all kind of nasty rumors and things that kind of befall him. It's definitely worth watching. It's funnier when he's playing the songs. I think what's kind of interesting about the movie, it's not in a semi-documentary style. It's not presented as a documentary, but it has that kind of, handheld look.
Right.
This is the actual guy who writes and performs these songs. So when he does so, it's very entertaining.
Right.
And I actually didn't realize until after I watched the movie that he was a real guy. Although, obviously he's a real guy. It's not CGI, but you know what I mean? I didn't realize this is what he actually did. And so what he does well. I think it's worth checking out. Definitely does not break new ground when it comes to kind of taking LA down a peg.
Sure. Right.
Seen that many times. but it's pretty clever the way it, sort of builds up against him. So that, despite his best efforts, it all kind of goes to hell. So, I think it's worth checking out.
All right.
I wanted to find some things that maybe people hadn't seen, because I could talk about all the things I've seen that everyone's seen a million times except for me, but I...
No, you succeeded, because those are pretty obscure, so...
Whew. All right.
That's
my middle name.
I will track them down. I just saw, for the first time, actually, I had never seen Harold and Maude. Have you ever seen it?
I have not seen Harold and Maude. I read your review over
yes.
on DVD Verdict.
At DVD Verdict. I think you would like Harold and Maude a lot, actually, because mm-hmm. I know you're a fan of The Graduate, and I know you're a fan of Wes Anderson, and I think all of those things share sort of common DNA with Harold and Maude. It's one of those movies that, like, you've heard forever is really great, and then you see it, and it's great, you know? I don't know. I mean, I feel like it's exactly what I was expecting, but while at the same time a pleasant surprise,
mm-hmm.
if that makes sense. It's like, wow, this is every bit as good as I'd heard, and in being so is kind of surprising, because a lot of times a movie that you've heard talked up for years can be a little bit of a letdown, or you say there's movies that I'll watch and I'll say, okay, I see why people think this is good, but I'm unable to connect to it, or it's dated, or whatever, but... it was really great, and I think you especially would like it a lot.
This isn't because I once dated a 90-year-old woman.
This is because you exclusively date 90-year-old women.
Come on, they're so old. That doesn't turn you on? No? Really? I mean, look, they have a lot of wisdom, a lot of stories to tell.
The other thing I saw is a new release. I actually went and saw Ted, the Seth MacFarlane dirty talking teddy bear movie. I laughed more than I thought I would. I'm not really a Family Guy fan. I don't watch really American Dad or The Cleveland Show. I mean, I've tried to give Family Guy a number of chances, and it just doesn't do a whole lot for me. So I didn't necessarily go into Ted as a fan of Seth MacFarlane, but I also didn't go in looking to hate it because I have some sort of grudge against him. I tried to keep an open mind. I laughed a number of times. You know, the movie it kind of reminded me of was... Wanderlust from earlier this year, which I know you mm-hmm. reviewed at DVD Verdict, in that I think both movies have really, really funny stuff in them, but I think they're also like big messes as actual movies, like not put together particularly well, stories that don't quite work. They kind of drag. You could tell that they've been kind of cut to shreds. And I mean, Wanderlust is, the Blu-ray basically confirms that by offering an entire alternate version of the movie. There's funny jokes, but it's sort of a weird mess as a movie, and it goes on for easily a half an hour too long. But I will say that, one of my big complaints about Family Guy is always that it feels kind of soulless. And I don't even say that, like, hyperbolically. The Simpsons really loves its characters and has a heart to it. And Family Guy doesn't really. I don't think there's much heart in that show. But Ted, I think, kind of avoids that. Ted has genuine affection for all the characters and takes their relationships seriously and is, you know, kind of sweet at times, as sweet as a movie can be about a bong-smoking teddy bear. So it does a lot of things that I liked. I didn't think it was, you know, the year's best comedy or anything. I laughed a couple of times. That's maybe more than I expected. I don't know where I can't quite figure out where I'm coming down on this review. Like, see it if you want. I don't know. It's not anything I would say. Yeah, make sure you see it. It's you know, it's the funniest movie of the year. It's fine.
Did the summer movies sort of break down into tiers for you of movies you say you have to see, movies that are like, well, if you've seen everything else, and then movies just to avoid?
I wish they did. They should. But this summer has been so weird in that the movies that I was most excited about have sort of disappointed me, and movies that I didn't even necessarily want to see, like Snow White and the Huntsman, I actually ended up really liking. But I know better than to recommend it to anyone. So,
but it hasn't stopped you from composing quite a bit of fan fiction.
No, gosh, no.
I read your Tumblr. That's a thing on the internet, correct?
I believe. Okay. I believe the Tumblr dot Tumblr. Yeah, I mean, aside from like the Avengers, I can't think of anything this summer that I think everyone has to see.
Yeah.
So Ted is definitely not part of that. Ted is like, you could see it if you want. Listen, if you've already made up your mind to go see Ted, you should see it.
Absolutely.
They can put that on the poster.
It's a movie.
See this if you've already chosen to. Should we talk about Spider-Man?
Let's do so.
Okay.
I'm curious to see what you thought, because this is, you know, this is new. It just came out a couple days ago for us.
Yeah.
Well, for everyone else too, but I'm not sure when everyone's listening to it.
We are going to try and remain spoiler free for a little while. And then I think later on in the podcast, maybe we'll announce that we're going to get into spoilers so we can talk about specifics a little bit better. But if you haven't seen the movie yet and you want to listen for a little while longer, please do. We'll give you plenty of warning before we start spoiling stuff. Before we start talking about the movie, I want to at least attempt to address. And actually, right before we started recording, you made mention of, you alluded to this. I'm already very, very frustrated by the dialogue about The Amazing Spider-Man, because it has fallen victim to the same sort of weird internet sort of black and white dichotomy that a lot of, I guess, specifically comic book movies fall victim to, where you can't talk about it without immediately denouncing the Sam Raimi movies or denouncing this movie because it's not the Sam Raimi movies. You have to say that this movie sucks and you're waiting for The Dark Knight. You have to say that you hate Andrew Garfield and so you're not going to see this. It's just, it's all these extremes. And I just feel like I'm excited to actually have a conversation about the movie instead of just make these declarative statements that have nothing to do with the, I mean, I noticed you were in a little bit of a Facebook discussion with a bunch of people who had already sort of made their mind up, none of whom had seen the movie, correct?
That was a really fascinating thread because, you know, I mean, it started with a very kind of innocuous statement. Someone basically said, I have no interest in, you know, it's Spider-Man's out, but I don't know, I have no interest in it, which is fine. I mean, that, you know, you can't tell anyone they should or should not want to see a movie.
I completely agree that that's totally fine. Although I do think it's weird when people announce things that they're not going to do. Like,
totally. Totally weird.
I'm going to put on my Facebook, like, not eating lasagna for dinner. Nobody asked if I was, okay, whatever.
Right, exactly. And that's, you know, it's totally an internet thing to do. So right. Like, oh, I have no interest in this. So it's kind of a backhanded insult.
Right.
But then it turned into this thread of people talking about why it wasn't going to be good, none of whom had seen it. And then at the end of the thread, after I'd sort of said, well, none of you have actually seen this thing, right? People would come back and say, oh, I've seen it. And everyone who came back and said they'd seen it said they liked it.
Oh, well, look at that.
So it became this kind of weird thing where everyone who hadn't seen it and had made up their minds ahead of time was describing why it wasn't going to be good.
Right.
And then, so, and I'm certainly not, obviously, this is been a pretty divisive movie, and it's hard to kind of sort out where the people who haven't liked the movie you know, had legitimate beefs, and where the people who haven't liked the movie had kind of made up their minds a bit ahead of time. I mean, this movie suffered from major backlash almost from the get-go. When the first trailer started coming out, when they first announced it, I think both because, you know, as we've heard many, many times up, you know, leading up to now, you know, the Sam Raimi movies, you know, the last one was, what, 5 years ago?
Yeah.
And there are a lot of cries of too soon, like, why are they making it again? This is ridiculous. You know, coupled with the, you know, very real fact that the main reason Sony wanted to make a new Spider-Man movie is so they wouldn't lose the rights to the film franchise.
Right.
You kind of, so you already had this sort of sense that it's going to be this soulless corporate, you know, we just have to get something out. Let's just pump it out. You know, it already kind of, you know, seemed like this really cynical thing. So you can take those concerns into watching the movie. That's fine, but you can't judge the movie based on those things. You can't criticize the movie because these other movies exist. And you can't criticize the movie because Sony didn't want to lose the rights to the franchise. I mean, neither of those are criticisms of the movie. You know, you have to judge the movie based on its own merits.
Right.
And I think there are a lot of people who either aren't doing that or who are taking a particular pleasure in denouncing the movie for whatever reason. I mean, I feel like I'm seeing almost a John Carter-like concerted effort among certain critics to just badmouth the movie in any way they can.
Yeah.
Which bothers me.
I feel like this is happening more and more, specifically with sort of these, for lack of a better word, geek properties. We saw it with John Carter.
Yep.
We saw it with Prometheus. You know, I never anticipated that The Amazing Spider-Man would be this lightning rod of controversy, where that it would be so divisive, especially after having seen it, and I won't get too specific, but to me, it's not the kind of movie that honestly inspires a huge reaction one way or the other. And maybe to tip my hand a little bit, like, that's my biggest complaint with the movie is that I'm kind of indifferent towards it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to be, because I really, really love Spider-Man as a character, as a comic book. And while I wasn't necessarily super excited about the movie, and I think that's just a function of oversaturation, and I don't even mean of the other Spider-Man movies. I'm not the guy who's like, what, too soon? They just made a Spider-Man movie 5 years ago. They can make a Spider-Man movie every year. I'd be happy. But
right.
I think there's just been so many comic book superhero movies that it's just I'm just starting to feel a little bit crushed under the weight of it, especially after the Avengers, which is like the biggest one of all time and has every character in it. So I couldn't get super excited about it. I went into it with an open mind, and you know, I mean, I did not love it. I didn't hate it. I don't think it's a bad movie, but I didn't feel like it was a particularly good movie. I thought it was just okay. There's stuff in it that I thought was really good, and then there's some stuff in it that I thought was actually pretty actively bad. But what was your reaction to the movie?
I liked it a lot. I think that we talked about this a bit around the time John Carter came out. And for some reason, that always comes to my mind, because I feel like this is my John Carter a little bit. I mean, I'm not like in love with this movie necessarily, but I liked it a lot. And it's getting a lot of hate. So now I understand how you felt when I was talking bad things about John Carter. But I really enjoyed it. It's one of those things where if you generally like a movie, then its flaws seem like nitpicks. And if you generally dislike a movie, its flaws seem like, you know, insurmountable, you know, obstacles to the movie being good. So to me, it's not a perfect movie, but I really liked what they did. I think that one of my complaints since seeing the movie and going and reading some other reviews is that there are a surprising number of people who basically claim that this is just a remake of Sam Raimi's origin story, which to me seems fair only in the sense that the basic structure and themes are present.
Yeah.
But it all seems like they almost went out of their way to make it different in almost every respect. Every kind of point where it would be the same or would kind of match up with Spider-Man's original origin, they twist a little bit in some way. And I'm not saying that it's a radically you know, different retelling of Spider-Man's origin, but it's definitely not the same as what Sam Raimi did at all.
I agree with that, and I also don't. Like, I do think that they tried to do things different, but to me it felt a little bit like surface level stuff. Like, instead of doing Mary Jane, they did Gwen Stacy. But I didn't feel like they necessarily found a way to actually make that different. So it was, it could have just as easily been Mary Jane if they had changed the hair color and the name.
Yeah, I mean, that's mostly fair. They didn't do anything that was necessarily out of step with the comic books either, right? Because it's not like there is this canonical, this is what happened to right. Spider-Man. Right. And if you go back to like the earliest days of the comic book, it is Gwen Stacy. And when I was, you know, when I was really into comic books as a teenager, I went back and bought a bunch of cheap reprints of the old Spider-Man comics. Yeah. And I got really into that kind of whole run. So I do have a lot of affection for that kind of early pre-Mary Jane stuff. So, you know, and it also kind of reminded me a bit. I read recently some of the Ultimate Spider-Man early issues, and this seems to draw a little bit more from that side of things.
Which, in a way, is sort of the direction that I hope they go. I mean, I don't want to spoil certain things, but it's hard to watch some of this movie knowing what's coming, at least in Spider-Man canon. I don't know. You know, I don't, again, I'm not saying like, hey, too soon, because Sam Raimi's, you know, Spider-Man 3 just came out 5 years ago or whatever, but it does disappoint me a little bit, honestly, that they decided to retell the origin story. I'm fine with hiring a different director. I'm fine with hiring a different cast. There are a lot of things about the approach that I kind of liked. I liked Andrew Garfield. I liked Emma Stone. I liked Martin Sheen, and I liked Sally Field as Aunt May and Uncle Ben. Obviously, they wouldn't be in the movie unless they did an origin story again. But it disappointed me, because I felt like that is a story that we were just told 10 years ago, and I didn't feel like they found enough different to do. I mean, the major beats are the same because they have to be, but then I didn't feel like the movie necessarily filled it in with different things that maybe we hadn't seen or hadn't felt in a Spider-Man movie. There were little touches here and there. The scene that keeps popping to mind is, you know, we have the montage where Spider-Man is learning, Peter Parker is learning to use his powers, and it's like, we have seen this. But there's a neat sequence where he starts swinging on some chains, and that's sort of the first time that he gets the idea for swinging on webs. And that's really neat. I wanted the movie to invent little things like that, that we hadn't seen before. And I think part of the issue is, you know, when the trailers first started coming out, this I was actually actively against. And again, I was trying to keep an open mind, but the trailers were really trying to drive this idea that this was the movie that was going to reveal the secret of Spider-Man's past, and he was going to find out who his parents really are. And you got this, the impression that they have something to do with him becoming Spider-Man, basically, that the radioactive spider bite triggers something that's already inside him, perhaps placed there by his scientist father. And I was a little bit opposed to that, because I was like, oh, I don't remember that ever being an issue for Spider-Man. I have to find out who I really am and the secret of my parents or anything. But at the same time, that is trying to do something different. And most of that appears to be scrubbed from the movie. Devin Faraci at Badass Digest, actually just today or yesterday, wrote an interesting article about, hey, what happened to all this stuff? And points to some scenes in trailers and in clips that were released, and suggests that there were some reshoots. Like, oh, they appear to have gotten rid of a lot of that material. And in doing so, they made a movie that feels more like the Sam Raimi one from 10 years ago, because it's just going through those same beats.
Yeah, and I read the same article. It is pretty fascinating, and it didn't necessarily strike me as much when I was watching it, because it seemed more like they're hinting at stuff. It's a mystery. If they get to it later, that's fine. I didn't really occur to me until after the fact that there were lines I remembered from the trailer that weren't at all in the movie, yeah. And there apparently are still TV spots running that include things that aren't in the movie really? That tie back directly to, you know, this whole kind of scrub storyline, or at least heavily cut down storyline that gets into Peter Parker's past and his parents. Peter Parker's parents' past. Pa-pa-pa. A pop filter. I wish I had a pop filter. And I do wish that had been in the movie, because I would have liked to see that. Not because it's the greatest way to tell a Spider-Man story, but because it's different. And I think one of the things I appreciated about the movie was that it tried to kind of – it tied back more into Peter's kind of science background, his interests. And it wasn't just – I'm a photographer, and I went to this lab, and a spider accidentally bit me. And it didn't have this sense of just like, oops, a bunch of accidents that made sense in the 60s, but seems a little weird now. It seemed like they were trying to build more of a reason for why everything was happening. And for better or worse, it seemed a little more grounded. I mean, as grounded as you can be in this kind of movie. I don't know. To me, it worked, and I guess there are a lot of surface level stuff when you sit back and, you know, really realize, yeah, you can kind of swap this out for that, and they just kind of slightly changed some of the major beats. If you're going to tell an origin story, at least they tried to do something a little bit different. I wish they had gone a little bit further, but it didn't bother me as much as maybe I guess it bothered you or some of the other people.
Well, it just seemed overly familiar. You know, when Batman Begins came out a couple years ago, they didn't necessarily reinvent Batman's origin, and nobody needs them to do that. I mean, gosh, the comic book fans would be calling for the heads of studios. But what they did was reinvent the approach to the material. And I think at times, The Amazing Spider-Man tries to do that in exactly the way that you're talking about. It sort of tries to ground it a little more in reality, and I like that. But maybe I never felt like it went far enough. There would be things in the movie that I liked, and I just found myself wishing that there was more of the stuff that I really liked. I liked the dynamic in the Parker house. I liked the scenes between Peter and Uncle Ben. I liked his relationship with Aunt May. I liked the scenes between Peter and Gwen Stacy. And I just felt like all of that stuff ended up a little bit underdeveloped because we have to keep jumping back to stuff with the lizard or even, you know, sequences of Spider-Man, which obviously you need Spider-Man in a Spider-Man movie, but it was like when they would treat it as sort of this character piece, that was interesting to me because that was maybe something that the original trilogy didn't necessarily do, but then they would almost chicken out and just go back to being sort of this standard superhero origin movie. You know, I mean, there's not much about the movie that jumps out to me as being aggressively bad, and that's why I'm a little bit confused by some of the really strong negative reaction, because with the exception of, I think, the stuff with Kurt Connors and the lizard, none of which really worked, I didn't think. I don't think there's things in the movie that are bad, but I just wish that there was more that stuck out to me as being really good. I just, a couple weeks ago, rewatched the original Sam Raimi Spider-Man and wrote a review of it. And that movie is a mess. That movie has a ton of problems. But it has personality, a very specific personality. And that was one of the things I felt like was missing from Amazing Spider-Man, is that it doesn't seem to have its own personality. I don't see a lot of the filmmaker in it. I don't necessarily see a lot of, hey, what makes this character special in a way that maybe other superheroes aren't. I like that they added the stuff about him being sort of this genius scientist. But other than that, you know, they seem to go this direction of he's this brooding, sad kid. And they're really trying to drive this idea that the movie is about answering the question of who am I? Even though all that stuff that we talked about got erased, about the secret of his past and his parents and everything, there are still multiple scenes that even in the text, like, call out this idea of this movie is about answering the question, who am I? There's a scene where he's looking for an ID badge where a woman says, like, having a hard time finding yourself. Oh, and there's a scene with a teacher where she says, there's only 10 stories. And, you know, the most popular one is, who am I? I mean, the movie just beats you over the head with this idea. But I never felt like the movie was interested in actually being about that. It just seemed to need to retell the origin of Spider-Man. And I guess, you know, I can't go back and wish it to be a different movie, but I just kind of wish with all these pieces in place, they had just started from a point of he's already Spider-Man and just told a new Spider-Man story. You can have Gwen Stacy, you know, you can have all these other pieces in place, but to do the origin story again without bringing much invention to it, to me, was a disappointment.
Yeah, I mean, thinking about the, you know, range of superheroes, it seems to me that Spider-Man is probably the superhero whose origin is most necessary to understanding who the character is. I mean, it's kind of takes the longest to unfold, and it kind of ties directly into his motivations. I mean, you have Batman, it's basically a scene. It's his parents.
Right.
thing, he gets shot, and boom, he's, you know, he becomes whatever. He becomes Batman. There's more than everybody, you know. Superman, you know, the Krypton's exploding, the thing gets sent to Earth, he's a baby, naked baby holding up a car, whatever. but with Spider-Man, you know, it's all about him being this, you know, confused kid, about him being a high schooler, about him being an outcast. You know, he's not as rich as Bruce Wayne. He's not as powerful as Superman. He has to kind of wrestle with balancing his, you know, school life with his, you know, home life, with the superhero thing, with trying to keep every, you know, people he loves safe. And I'm not saying that this movie necessarily gets into that to the same degree. Even the, you know, Sam Raimi's movies do. You reviewed Spider-Man recently. I reviewed Spider-Man 2, I'm sorry.
Yep.
And that there's a lot of that movie that is just people talking. And it's heavy-handed times, but, I mean, it really is all about that balance and about him trying to find that balance.
Yeah.
And, you know, making decisions and sacrifices and so on. And they don't get into it as much here, except, you know, at the end they start to hint at some of that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But I don't know how you can kind of create a new Spider-Man without doing an origin to kind of set the tone. And I agree with you that they didn't go far enough. I think they do play it too safe in the movie, and considering what seemed like very late edits and reshoots, there was some, you know, disagreement about what that direction should be. Mm-hmm. I wish they had done more with his parents, because if you're going to do it, do it. I like the way they did his origin. And I don't want to get into spoilers, but I like the way they brought out some of the more spidery aspects of it. I like the way, I really like the scene when he first discovers that he has powers.
Okay. See, yeah. I was not. We'll get into that in spoilers. But I actually was not crazy about that scene.
Oh, really? I don't know. I like the way all that kind of, you know, happened.
Yeah,
it was all very kind of confused and adolescent and accidental, and
right.
You know, it's really having a tough time. I thought they did a good job of that stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know. I like that. Okay, we'll save some stuff for spoilers.
We'll get into spoilers soon.
I like the way that they did the origin stuff for the most part. And like I said, I like the way they tied it into the science. I don't know. For me, it worked more than it didn't.
Yeah.
I was not really, the first half, two thirds of the movie worked for me generally. And then it was only kind of closer to the end that things started to kind of stumble for me.
Right.
And that's where most of my complaints, you know, come in. I don't know. I wish they had done more. I think this certainly is not a movie that lives up to the criteria of a good movie where you say, is it something I haven't seen before? Is it something new?
Right.
This is not new. But
I obviously it can't be totally new. I saw the movie with JB, and when it was over, he said, okay, if the Sam Raimi movies didn't exist, what would your reaction be to this movie? And that's a valid question, but at the same time, it's not, because the producers and the filmmakers made this movie in a universe in which the Sam Raimi movies do exist. And so I just feel like for them to do the origin again, they just needed to find a new approach. And again, I don't mean to go back to Batman Begins, because I don't necessarily want the dark, gritty Spider-Man. And I think, you know, audiences more and more sort of want their superhero movies to be that way. And this movie does play that game a little bit. It's definitely darker than the Sam Raimi one. Again, you hit on it with this idea of sort of trying to ground it more in reality. And they do that a lot, but at a certain point, they just throw all that to the wind, because you can't really ground any of the stuff with the lizard in reality.
Sure.
And maybe it's just a function of, maybe they should have just picked a different villain, you know? I mean, again, one of the things I like about Batman Begins is that it's all these different villains, and they're not necessarily superpowered. They're just criminals on the street. And I mean, I know nobody wants to watch 2 hours of Spider-Man just beating up purse snatchers and stuff, but if they're going to go the approach where they're trying to ground it a little more realistically and be much less overtly comic booky than the Sam Raimi movie, which is very comic booky, I wish they would have gone a little further with that, because it's a movie that can't quite make up its mind about what it wants to be. Quick side note, after seeing The Amazing Spider-Man, I actually rewatched the Sam Raimi one. I just watched it like 3 weeks ago, but I watched it again. And I will say, it's only 10 years old, but watching it after seeing The Amazing Spider-Man, I mean, that movie has not dated well at all already, but watching it now, it felt like it was made 30 years ago. It feels like the TV movie version of The Amazing Spider-Man, if that makes sense.
I think what I'm talking about, it being more grounded, it's probably not quite the right way to put it. I think it's more that it seems like what happens in the movie feels like it flows a little more organically, that the reasons why things happen make more sense. You know, the reason why he gets, you know, bitten by the spider, the reason why he is where he is, how he comes to develop this into a crime fighter makes more sense. All the things that happen kind of lead one into the other with a little bit more detail, a little bit more of a flow. It's not just, you know, oh, my Uncle Ben died, I'm going to become a crime fighter.
Right.
So I think that's kind of where the grounding comes in. It's certainly a comic book movie, not as much as Sam Raimi. But you know, it's interesting talking about Batman Begins, because that's a movie I watched relatively recently again. And I think that, you know, that's a flawed movie.
Yep.
I mean, I think it's pretty similar to Amazing Spider-Man in kind of about the point in the movie that it starts to fall apart,
right,
or starts to become less grounded.
By the way, that's almost every – I mean, look at Iron Man.
Absolutely.
Look at Sam Raimi's. Look at Captain America. I mean, almost every one of these superhero movies, first two-thirds is great, and then the whole last third is always a mess.
Sure. And that's – I mean, I think that's one of the reasons why there are things that it's like at the end of this movie, but I can't, you know, single it out as saying this is why this movie is terrible compared to other superhero movies.
Right.
Because almost every superhero movie takes major shortcuts, overreaches. Yeah. I mean, even Avengers, a movie that, you know – we all love, takes major shortcuts at the end.
Definitely.
And really, you know, goes a bit too far and then can't quite, you know, stick the landing with the same consistency that
right.
the first, you know. So it's not, you know, it's not just Amazing Spider-Man. I think it works. I don't know. For me, it works more than it doesn't. But.
Like the character of Aunt May, that Sally Field plays. And she's not given a ton to do, but that's a great example of what I think, if I'm reading you correctly, I keep using this word grounded, but like she's an example of sort of changing the approach to the material that I like, because when you go back and watch the Raimi Spider-Mans, the approach to Aunt May is basically, let's find the woman who looks the most like the comic book drawing
right.
and cast her in the movie. And she's fine, whatever, but it's more about how can I make this page come to life on the screen? Whereas the Aunt May version is just sort of not a reinterpretation of the character, but just more about like, she's just a real person. These are all real people that live in this house and have real lives and interactions. And I like the whole bit about, well, I don't want to spoil stuff. it involved eggs, but whatever. So she's an example of what I think the movie needs to do a little bit more of, in the way that it approaches stuff. I guess, you know, I'm just sort of taking issue with, we get the beat where he's kind of flirting with the girl, and then he's bit by the spider, and then he discovers he has the powers, and then he's off by himself testing out his powers, and then we get the montage where he's chasing down bad guys, and then we get the scene where he stands up to Flash Thompson, and it's, I mean, if you put it side by side with the Sam Raimi one, they're just so similar in hitting those beats, and I just wanted this movie to carve out more of a unique space for itself. Again, there's things that this movie does that I like better. I like the science angle. I like Andrew Garfield in the Spider-Man suit. I like the costume design better. I like the fact that when he's swinging, that it looks like a real guy, like a practical stunt swinging instead of this awful video game character bouncing around like a cartoon, the way that Spider-Man does, in the Raimi movies. That it has more weight, that it seems more like a real thing. At the same time, you know, this movie's a little bit too in love with its Spider-Man comic book poses to the point where the image will freeze for a second practically, or just go into slow motion so we can all say, wow, that looks just like a frame from the comic book. Like, no, let's keep this moving, guys. We don't have to call attention to, look at how much we made this look like a comic book, because again, faithfulness to the comic book page does not a good movie make, you know, and that's part of the problem you always get when you're discussing these movies, especially amongst comic book fans, is that the only criteria by which they measure the movie's quality is how much is or isn't it like the source material.
I think that, to me, the, you know, poses as he swings fall under the nitpick category, because I, you know, to me,
absolutely,
it's not a huge deal.
No, it's not. It's not a deal breaker at all.
And I think one of the problems with starting with comic book source material is that comic books themselves are all over the place.
Yeah.
I mean, Marvel is constantly rebooting its series. They have, mm-hmm. like, you know, there's always something crazy going on. DC just recently did it. People die and come back all the time. Yeah. I mean, comic books are repetitive and nonsensical and awesome, but you know, you can't, basically you can't gauge a movie based on comic books, because where you're starting from is already
right
kind of messy.
Right. But what Marvel has always been good at in terms of their movies is at least getting to the heart of what makes this specific character interesting or special.
Sure. And I think when you talk about Aunt May, that gets to where I think is the most, you know, the biggest strength of the movie is the performances, or at least the casting. Yeah. I think Andrew Garfield and Emma Stone are great. They have a great chemistry together. To me, you know, it didn't feel really underdeveloped. I liked their scenes. I guess I didn't feel shortchanged, maybe the way you did in some
of
the...
It's not even that I felt shortchanged. It's that their scenes were so good that I wanted more of those and less of the scenes that I thought were bad. You know what I mean?
Sure.
It's not that I felt like the movie failed by not having enough. It's just like, hey, play to your strengths. When you have something that's really working, put a lot of that in your movie.
Right. I mean, I think this is an example of a really good movie that could have been great if someone had had the guts to really go for it. And that has plagued pretty much every comic book movie, because pretty much every adaptation of almost anything, because no one wants to stray too far from the source material. No one wants to stray too far from the expectations of the genre or whatever. I mean, I have problems with some things in Christopher Nolan's Batman movies, because he seems tied to certain aspects of the comic book character that, you know, if he sort of let that go a bit more, it could work better as a movie.
Right.
One of the things that I like so much about Spider-Man 2, and why I think it remains my favorite of the Spider-Man movies, is because it really strikes a balance between what works in comic books and what works in movies.
And, right.
And I think I really my favorite comic book movies are the ones that understand each medium and work to the strengths of both.
Yeah.
They're not just trying to, like you say, reproduce what's on the comic book page, nor are they trying to just, be a movie that kind of ignores what's good about the character in the context of the comic book, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, Well, and again, I can't necessarily fault Amazing Spider-Man for this, because this is a problem that so many, not just comic book movies, but movies in general are facing these days, which is just, I sit through Amazing Spider-Man, there's things in it I like, there's things in it I don't like, I end up feeling kind of indifferent, and I'm probably more disappointed in my indifference to Amazing Spider-Man than I would be in indifference to another movie, because the character holds such a special place in my heart. I'm frustrated. I should love this, and I don't quite. But I sit through it mostly so that, you know, in 2 or 3 years, I can see the sequel in which they get it right. You know what I mean? Where it's like, I have to sit through this 2-hour movie in which they lay the groundwork and get this stuff out of the way. And this is not new to Amazing Spider-Man. This is true of the original Spider-Man. This is true of, you know, Batman Begins to Dark Knight. This is true of even, like, Blade to Blade 2. It's, you have to get this origin story out of the way so you can start telling original stories, basically, you know, something new. We understand who the character is. Now let's focus on that and tell a new story. And this movie plays that game where it's trying to set things up for a sequel, and there's a little credits tag that we're going to have to get to momentarily in spoilers, because to me that was the most cynical thing in the movie. But
sure,
I have confidence that even with this same group of people, if they get together in 2 years and put out a new Spider-Man movie, I'm confident that I will like it more, because it can now be its own thing. It's not tied to this origin story. Sure. Again, you know?
And it's tough because I don't know that you really can do a new take on Spider-Man and start, you know, after he's already Spider-Man, because you haven't explained why he is the way he is. I don't know. To me, and maybe I'm just being an apologist for the origin story again here, but I feel like you had to lay the groundwork and create this sort of alternate version of the Spider-Man universe where certain things are more important or true or not. Mm-hmm. And again, it would have been told, this would be a different conversation if they got into the Peter parents.
Right, which again, is not even, I'm not even particularly interested in that story. Like,
I want to know.
See, I don't really, but at the same time, it would have been something different.
I want to know what they do for Father's Day, for Mother's Day. I want to know about his, did they have a dog? I don't know.
Perhaps.
I don't know. I mean, it's like that's the Spider-Man story I've always wanted to hear. But right. Again, it would have been them doing something different.
Exactly.
And I think if the biggest problem with the movie, you know, I think you touched on it by saying you're kind of indifferent toward it. It's that it's not new. It's another comic book movie. It's another Spider-Man movie. And as good as it is, it's just kind of something else to put up on your shelf next to all the other comic
book movies. Right.
It doesn't stand out because there are so many others that are similar enough that for whatever this movie does well, I think it does a lot of things well, it's just, it's not unique.
Right. And what it does best, again, is put a lot of things in place for a better movie. It puts a good cast in place. It has a specific aesthetic. I mean, there's things that I'm excited to see in a better movie. And I will say, honestly, and this very rarely happens with me, I saw it a couple days ago. Typically, the further away from a movie I get, the less I like it, mm-hmm. because either I start to forget it immediately or its problems become more and more glaringly obvious. See Prometheus. But this movie, I actually think I like a little bit better in retrospect. I think the things that I like are the things that are sticking out in my head, and mm-hmm. the problems are I'm kind of forgetting. So that's something.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, I would love it if we got to this point where a movie like this could be presented almost as, I don't know, I hate to use the word webisode, especially when talking about Spider-Man, but, you know, you get a series of, like, really, you know, beautifully shot, well-produced, you know, introductions to the characters, to the universe. It tells the origin story. So that when you get to the actual big screen thing, because I don't think you can start cold and say we've changed everything, but we're not going to tell you what those things are.
Right.
Just trust us. He became Spider-Man, and it's different. I think as you have talked about on this podcast before, we're kind of getting to a point of really oversaturation with comic book movies. I don't know how much longer this train is going to last. I don't know how much longer it should.
I literally think it's going to break right after Dark Knight Rises. I think that's the peak, and then I think it's all going to fall apart.
I mean, we've had the major Marvel movies leading up to the Avengers. Every sequel after that in that franchise, as interesting or as fun as they may be, is going to be kind of, I assume, diminishing returns, at least in the fact that it's not going to be this fresh new thing. It's going to be the same, been there, done that, as good as they're going to be. Especially when everyone is just called Thor 2, Captain America 2.
Yeah, I mean it's going to be really hard to get excited about, you know, Iron Man 3 after having already seen the Avengers. And I like Iron Man and everything, but yeah, there is this feeling of like, oh, really? Now it feels like work. I don't know.
I mean, at this point, the only superhero movie I'm so excited about is Edgar Wright's Ant-Man.
Yeah.
And honestly, if they make a bunch of really obscure comic book movies, I could be behind that. Like, you know, characters that...
Well, that seems to be the way they're going. I swear they just this week announced a Guardians of the Galaxy movie. I mean, Marvel is putting some real faith in its audience, because I honestly thought they were taking a chance when they made, like, Iron Man and Thor into a movie, because I felt like outside of the comic book audience, people don't really know those characters. And I was proven wrong, obviously, but Guardians of the Galaxy, that's really testing people. I don't know.
Yeah.
But let's talk a little bit spoilery about Amazing Spider-Man. If you haven't yet seen the movie... Obviously, you should, because it's the summer and this is a new Spider-Man movie. I mean, there's no reason not to see it. I mean, it's one of these movies that, like, yeah, doesn't everybody see Spider-Man?
I mean, what are you going to see? The Katy Perry movie? Again?
Exactly. The origin of Katy Perry. So, I mean, I think everybody should see Amazing Spider-Man, if only to make up their own minds and not constantly have this discussion about, like, that's going to suck because they just did it, or that's going to suck because it's not Raimi, or that's going to suck because it's not The Dark Knight Rises, which those two things have nothing to do with each other, but whatever. So go see Amazing Spider-Man and then come back and listen to everything we say after this point. I thought all the stuff with the lizard was really bad. And I don't know if that's just because the character isn't going to work on screen. I don't know if it's... I thought it was kind of a bad special effect. I thought he failed to be interesting, even a little, as a villain. You know, for all the faults of the Green Goblin and the original Spider-Man, including the costume design... and Willem Dafoe going really, really over the top with his performance, there's at least sort of this father-son dynamic that the movie is acknowledging. And I think it's kind of interesting. Doc Ock in Spider-Man 2 is obviously, I think, the best of the Spider-Man villains in terms of the movie universe. I just didn't think this movie was at all interested in understanding Kurt Connors, except that, you know, he's sad about his arm. I thought all of the stuff with the lizard, all of his dialogue in the last third was, I mean, kind of embarrassing. His plan to turn some SWAT guys into lizards, which the movie promptly ignores.
Yeah.
None of it makes any sense. And honestly, I also take issue with the fact that every one of these movies also has to give us the villain origin in addition to giving us the Spider-Man origin. And that's, again, that's true of the Raimi movies. With every subsequent Spider-Man, you know, we get one, sometimes two villains, and every time we also have to see how that villain is created. Mm-hmm. Not to keep going back to the Nolan Batman movies, but, like, these guys just show up, you know? Like, there's a guy That's called true. The Joker. Here he is. Here's the Scarecrow. Here's Ra's al Ghul. Like, we don't have to go through the origin of, you know, the Joker from the Tim Burton Batman, or the origin of Catwoman, or, you know, those original Batman movies played that same game where they have to explain where the villain comes from. It's just lost screen time, you know?
Yeah, well, I agree with you kind of in the end game of the lizard, and I agree that the special effect isn't great. I guess I liked at least that there's, you know, there's a parallel storyline between, you know, what happened to Peter and what happened to Dr. Connors. They're intertwined in a very direct way because of, you know, working with Peter's father and then Peter providing, you know, the algorithm that allows everything to kind of happen. To me, at least they tie together. It's not like there's this accidental side thing. Their fates are sort of intertwined.
Right, but they don't necessarily attempt to tie it together in terms of... Because with the lizard, it's sort of a Jekyll and Hyde thing, where Kurt Connors turns into the lizard and loses control. Mm-hmm. If they had made it, you know, that both of these guys are essentially sort of affected by the same thing, this genetic mutation where he takes on the characteristics of a spider and he takes on the characteristics of a lizard, and that the split is it with what they choose to do with that power, that Spider-Man obviously makes the choice to do good and the lizard makes the choice to turn SWAT guys into lizards. But because they play that Jekyll and Hyde game, he's not even responsible for his own choices. You know what I mean? So
sure.
So I don't think that the way that it's tied together even works.
I agree that, and while I was watching it, I sort of wondered, well, how come Peter can be bitten by a spider and basically just get good powers that he can control and he's fine, whereas, you know, Dr. Connors injects himself with this thing and then he just kind of goes out of control and just all goes downhill. Right. And I guess that may have been explained if we got the version that, you know, where we find out that Peter's father, you know, gave him the stuff when he was a kid. So I guess I like the beginning stuff for Dr. Connors. I agree that they don't flesh it out. It seems kind of like Captain America and Avengers. There must have been other stuff that they left out. I mean, he wears a wedding ring. We don't know anything about his family. We don't know anything about his past. He just sort of is there to be the scientist guy who turns into the
right
lizard.
Because the movie needed a villain. I mean, sure. It's kind of like an afterthought. And so that's why every time they cut away to just a scene of Kurt Connors or the lizard, I think the movie kind of falls flat.
Yeah. I think they start to do something interesting with him. I mean, the reason that he first injects himself is how I read it, to test it so he could, if it was going to go bad, he could, I don't know, stop the evil scientist guy from giving it to all those veterans.
Right,
I don't know.
Right.
It seemed like it started as not necessarily a selfless act, but one where he's kind of, he turns himself into the guinea pig to move forward. I mean, maybe I'm reading it wrong. Maybe
no, that's, which, by the way, that is the exact origin of the Green Goblin in the Sam Raimi Spider-Man.
Sure.
But we have this formula. I better test it on myself or else, you know.
Sure. And that's true. And it's interesting actually to see the lizard, you know, as kind of shoddy as the CGI is at times. I mean, this is sort of almost what I wish they had done if they could have with the Green Goblin in the first Spider-Man, because then they wouldn't have had to do that suit, which always seemed like, I mean, I know it probably would not work at all. And maybe we'll find out in Amazing Spider-Man 2 or 3,
that
when they bring in the Green Goblin, that he is a CGI creature that looks horrible. But I always kind of like the Green Goblin in the comic books in his kind of gesture where – I don't know why. I mean,
no, probably, I do too. And actually, I'm not a fan of the Ultimate Spider-Man Green Goblin at all. I much prefer the original. And again, I wonder if, you know, now we are sort of more accepting or more sophisticated as an audience when it comes to comic book movies, that you can make an Avengers movie and get away with things that – Sam Raimi could not have gotten away with at all in 2002, and that's why the Green Goblin couldn't be this guy in, like, weird tights. They needed to have more of, like, a real-world basis, so it's this generic armor that is horrible.
I have a very tough time. I can't really defend a lot of the lizard stuff. All I can say is that it didn't bother me too much until we got to the end game, until it just became this thing where he had to turn everyone into lizards, and it turned into kind of the same biotoxin idea as Batman Begins, it was all this stuff being sprayed all over everyone,
right?
Because that's what supervillains do, I guess.
It was interesting to watch because I felt like at a certain point, I always felt like the Sam Raimi movie, the original, is really good up until he becomes Spider-Man, and then it starts taking these shortcuts and its montages and characters show up just for the sake of having a confrontation, and it all kind of falls apart. And Amazing Spider-Man makes so many of the same mistakes that it's hard not to compare the two movies, because even divorced from content, it ends up feeling like such a similar movie because it screws up in so many of the same ways, where after he becomes Spider-Man, we just get scene after scene of, you know, the Lizard shows up at the high school just out of nowhere so that they can fight at the high school. I mean, I know it's because, oh, he finds out that it's Peter Parker, but it just starts jumping around into these confrontations without taking the time to sort of build to those. And again, that's one of the things that, Spider-Man 2 does a little bit better, with the exception of the scene where he throws the car through the window of the cafe, which makes no sense. If he wants Spider-Man alive, why is he trying to kill him? You know, there's a scene that I really like when he goes down into the sewer to find the Lizard, and he spends time making a little, like, web nest, basically, and then it cuts to him sitting inside this nest playing with his cell phone. And that was a great touch, and I felt like that was a way of making him feel a little bit more contemporary without being super obnoxious. I could do it without, like, the Coldplay songs and the skateboarding and all that stuff. I thought him playing on the cell phone was this reminder that, oh, yeah, he's just a kid. Yeah. And I like that they showed him spending the time to do something, to make a plan and to try and figure things out, because so many times it's just he swings and grabs a guy or whatever. So I really liked that, but then it just turns into this generic CGI fight between him and the Lizard.
I mean, and that I think is probably about the point where it starts to stumble for me, is that,
yeah,
kind of at the end of that. And I actually kind of like the sewer stuff, but right, kind of starting in the school, right, does kind of devolve into something that's,
it's because it just starts to feel generic. It just starts to feel rushed.
Sure.
Because, you know, we have to get to the end. And honestly, you know, the more that the Lizard shows up in the movie, for me, the less the movie works. And whether that's because his stuff doesn't work, or if it's just he's a symptom of the things in the movie that aren't working, like the pacing, I couldn't say. But yeah, it started to fall apart pretty quickly for me. And the dialogue, I felt like, got way worse longer in the movie. Do we need to talk about the crane scene?
We probably do. I was going to talk about something better.
Go ahead.
No, we'll I was going to say that I like the way, I alluded to it earlier, I like the way they get into Spider-Man beginning his crime-fighting spree, is the wrong word. But, you know, he does it because he wants to track down Uncle Ben's killer. It's not that he corners him in the building, he catches him, and then he has taken on his great responsibility and is just saving everybody. He is very specifically trying to hunt down this guy, and along the way, he captures all these criminals. And I thought the scene where he, you know, is taking on the car thief was great. I thought that showed kind of some of the humor, the way he moved. I thought that was a very Spider-Man scene. I really liked that stuff. It's kind of the way he fought, the way he jumped around. Even the scene where he's being chased by all those guys and he's jumping up and climbing up on all the, like, all that stuff, I thought was great. And I mean, that's another one of those plot threads that they just sort of left behind.
Because he never finds the guy.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of makes me wonder what the movie could have been if that is what he was chasing the whole movie. He was trying to, like, avenge his uncle's death, and it kind of built up to this moment where he had to make a decision or something. I don't know.
Well, that's right. But that's the thing. It's like, I'm fine with that sort of being unresolved. I'm fine with him never actually finding the guy, as long as the movie takes the time to show him giving up that pursuit for the sake of something greater, you know?
Sure.
Because I really like the scene where Dennis Leary, he's having dinner at the Stacy's house, and Dennis Leary basically calls him out and says, Spider-Man's not, you know, trying to help the police. He has an agenda. He's only seeking out this one guy. He's not, you know, necessarily trying to do good. He's basically on a witch hunt, or he's out for revenge, you know? And I think that kind of clicks for Peter Parker at that moment, and he decides to do something greater. But I think that's me filling in a lot of the blanks that the movie doesn't do.
Sure. And the movie definitely feels underdeveloped in some areas, clearly, and who knows how much of that is because of the edits. And I'd like to think that somewhere there's a magical version of the movie that fills in all these gaps, and they had it, but those evil executives wanted to take it out so that people wouldn't be bored. But yeah, they are significant flaws in the movie. It's just that I liked it enough that they became nitpicks. A more significant issue in the movie, one of the scenes that I, rolled my eyes at was the crane scene. I think the scene that it initially calls back to, the scene where he saves the boy from the burning car, is a great scene and a touching moment. And there's the moment at the end where the boy is hugging his father. You can kind of sense that he's thinking about his. I mean, obviously it's not groundbreaking stuff, but I thought it worked. I even just like tell him to pull the mask on, to give the kid, it was a nice touch. I mean, then again, I don't dislike the scene in Spider-Man 2 where everyone stands up to Doc Ock on the subway car. So I am a hopeless romantic and like I said before, an idiot. So that's me. But
I thought the crane scene was bad in a lot of ways. Especially C. Thomas Howell saying, "That's the Spider-Man that saved my son." Not to be confused with that other Spider-Man.
Yeah, that was bad.
That did nothing. And part of it is because it's exactly what you're talking about. I don't like that scene in any of the movies. I don't like in the first Spider-Man when all the New Yorkers are throwing rocks and saying, "You mess with one of us, you mess with all of us." And I don't like the scene in Spider-Man 2 where they pass him along and the kid says, "Mr. Kimball, are you all right?"
You can kind of say that the fairy sequence in Dark Knight.
I was just getting to that. I don't like that scene in the Dark Knight. I don't know what it is. So, and this was, this was the Amazing Spider-Man's fairy scene, basically. So I did not like the crane scene. Having said that, there was a point, as it continued to build, once I was done throwing up in my mouth as all the cranes swing out so Spider-Man can make it. Oh, by the way, side note, the longer the movie goes, the more exposition is being delivered by television news crews. That's which true. I hate in any movie. We just get newscasters saying, "It doesn't look like he's going to make it." Like, we're watching the movie. We got it. As he is swinging across on these cranes, honestly, I felt like, wow, they almost turned this moment around and made it work. Because there is a sense of, I don't know if it's fear, but, Spider-Man knows that he's going for what will essentially be his final showdown with the Lizard. One of them is not leaving there, basically, and he knows that it could be him. And there's that, whether it's, the work of the score or just the timing, as I felt like the moment built in a way that I almost saved the whole crane thing, where I was like, wow, I actually feel for Peter Parker in this moment, his sort of fear and his courage in what he's about to face down, if that makes sense.
Sure. And I like the idea that he's injured. I don't necessarily like how he was injured.
Oh my gosh, but that was ridiculous.
That was dumb. But I mean, I guess I do like the idea that this is the final, it's not new to the story at all, but the final build up to the showdown. You have to overcome this last thing. And I agree with you. I think that the idea, maybe the sentiment behind it, fine. The way it was done was super cheesy.
It's reminiscent of the Ghostbusters having to climb all the steps, they know what they're going to and they go anyway. I like that. But yeah, the crane business was just terrible.
Yeah. I mean, it's and better or worse than the, "Let me call my girlfriend and tell her to make a serum that will save the day."
Oh boy. In 8 minutes and everybody's cured. Yeah. See that. And that's, I can't just fault The Amazing Spider-Man because, as we pointed out, that's almost every comic book movie.
Sure, absolutely.
At the same time, Amazing Spider-Man has the advantage of having seen all these other movies and knowing what pitfalls to avoid. And so I'm less willing to cut it slack because it should know better. It should say, boy, every movie makes this same mistake. Let's try to not do that.
Sure. I mean, I think the mistake that it makes is making the Lizard's Endgame something so catastrophic that they have to come up with a solution.
Right.
That, I don't know. They have to come up with something. It's the same way that in the Avengers it gets so, it's such that the world is going to end because all these things are coming. So we have to have this one thing that will stop this cataclysm.
Right.
What can that possibly be? I don't know. I'm not going to spoil that movie. I've seen it, but the same thing here. It's just, I don't know. Do you know how to make a serum? Okay. That works.
And cool. We just happen to have this thing that sort of weaponizes it. And again, this whole turning the SWAT guys into lizards just so they can be turned back into humans 15 minutes later. I mean, at least, and I'm sure it was cut for, you know, maybe budgetary reasons, but at least give us a scene where, like, the SWAT lizards start flipping over cars or something, where we're like, oh boy, this would be bad. If more people turn into lizards, we're screwed. But instead, we don't see the results, really. We just see that they turn into lizards and then turn back into humans.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of it's a silly idea, but it's a silly comic book idea. At least commit to it. And
right.
I mean, as that sequence was going along, I just kept thinking, just one shot of that. Just show us the aftermath quickly.
Right.
That's
right.
enough.
Right.
Like, just give us the touchstone.
Right.
So we know that you haven't forgotten and that you're not just, you know, and then just go back to what you're doing. That's fine.
Right. So then we get to the end, which again, just so closely mirrors the Sam Raimi movie where Spider-Man has to tell the girl, we can't be together, and it's mopey, and they're in love, but they can't be together, which is the exact, you know, Spider-Man and Mary Jane storyline from the first movie. And then we get the great moment where he says, those are the best kinds of promises. And I so wished that the movie had cut to black on her little smile there, because to me that says everything. Right. We know what's coming. But instead, taking a page out of the same Spider-Man playbook, they have to cut to a scene of him swinging around on webs the exact way that every Spider-Man movie has ended. Again, I'm not saying it's too soon. I'm not saying you can't redo a Spider-Man movie, but why literally just do the exact same beats where it ends with him swinging through the city and then freeze framing A, so that it looks like a comic book, and B, so I'm assuming we get the 3D effect of the web shooting out. I did not see the movie in 3D.
Yeah, you know, until you said that right then, you said, I wish the movie had ended with that. I thought in my head, wait, didn't it end there? And
no.
Then I remembered, oh yeah, I forgot the the gloosh of webbing that was coming toward me. That I assume would at least fill the screen, but it doesn't even do that.
And then,
it's pretty bad.
And then here's where we need to talk about the thing that just makes, that really upsets me, that makes me feel like this is just, that every movie now just exists to set up a franchise. You know what I mean? Like, this was one of the criticisms of Prometheus. It was like, well, all that's going to be answered in the sequels. No. Make a movie that works, and then if it's good, make a sequel. Don't just give me a 2-hour tease for the real movie. Right. And I'm not saying Amazing Spider-Man is that, but because Marvel has become sort of known for these post-credits tags, which often tease the next movie, we get that in Amazing Spider-Man. But what do we get? We get Kurt Connors in a jail cell, a mystery man whose face is not seen, asks a couple of questions, and then it's cut to black. We don't know who he is. I mean, it's meaningless. Why they decided to include that in the movie, I cannot understand.
Did you know that scene is in the trailer?
Is it really?
Yeah.
There was a certain point where
the most recent trailer. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, there was a point where I just bailed on all the marketing. What that little tease told me is that in the sequel, two things are going to happen. One, Peter may learn the secret about his parents. And two, someone is not going to leave him alone.
that's important.
I just thought it was...
He wants to be left alone.
They're just hedging their bets in such this ridiculous way where they don't even want to commit to who the guy is in the cell. You know what I mean? If you're going to make it a tease, have it be Norman Osborn. Have it be Peter's dad. Have it be, I don't care, have it be Kraven the Hunter, and just have him standing in the Kraven the Hunter costume so those of us in the audience can say, oh my gosh, that's Kraven the Hunter. That's what they're going to do next. That's the point of a tease.
Yeah.
This was just, I don't even know what this was. It just felt so cynical to me. Like, oh yeah, these movies have to have teases. We haven't figured out what it's going to be, but let's just put one in anyway.
Right. And I think that's the major disappointment with the movie, is that it does so many things so well, and it does things that I like so much. in a very uncynical way. And then there are things in the movie that are very cynical, that feel marketing driven, that feel like there's a hand, it's just studio notes being handed down.
Right.
Some of it's stuff that's cut, some of it's stuff that's put in where it's placed. And, you know, that the tag is meaningless. I mean,
it's completely meaningless.
It's there because we have now been trained as an audience to not leave as soon as the credits start.
Right.
And it's there because we have to do it.
Right.
So yeah, I agree with you 100%. Terrible. It should have ended with Gwen's little smirk. I did like to go back a little bit to that the Gwen stuff. When she, you know, goes to his house, it's raining, of course, she has the umbrella. She tells her she can't see anymore. She turns, she walks away. She turns around and says, "My dad made you promise, didn't he?" I didn't like that moment when it happened. But thinking back, I like it now because it makes her smarter and it makes her into sort of not just the damsel in distress or whatever.
Sure.
It's not just the love interest. She has an active role in it. She understands what's going on. She's obviously smart. Mary Jane, you know, not dumb, but certainly not in the movies, you know, super smart. She's not, you know, she's there to some degree just to give Peter Parker someone to love and to save.
Right.
Does this suggest that Gwen could be more than that?
And I'm glad that they got it out of the way that, like, she knows that he's Spider-Man already. We don't have to play that whole game of, like, it's a secret from her. I was never a fan of the Mary Jane character or necessarily Kirsten Dunst's portrayal of her in the original Sam Raimi movies, so I don't necessarily hold that dear. I do feel like, I mean, I liked Emma Stone, I liked Gwen Stacy, but I just don't feel like they really found anything unique about her as a character. Like I said, you dye her hair and she's Mary Jane. It's not that different. Honestly, when they announced Emma Stone, because Emma Stone is typically a redhead, and just knowing her personality, you know, they announced Emma Stone has joined the Amazing Spider-Man. I was like, wow, what great Mary Jane casting. She's redhead. She's sassy. That makes perfect sense. And then they say, no, she's Gwen Stacy. And I felt like, oh, that's just so they can say, see, this one's different because we're doing Gwen Stacy, not Mary Jane. It's like, okay, but I understand if they're going back to the origin, Gwen Stacy's important.
Sure. And it's weird because they're between the Sam Raimi movies and this movie, they're kind of mixing and matching bits of the origin from the original comic books, because there you have Doc Ock fighting Spider-Man, Gwen Stacy's dad gets killed.
Right.
And so she hates Spider-Man and doesn't know that it's Peter Parker.
Right. Right.
And then you have, you know, I think in the comic books, the Green Goblin killed Gwen Stacy.
Yeah, he drives her off a bridge.
Sorry, spoilers for 1960s comic books.
And well, that's why I hope it follows the Ultimate Spider-Man a little bit more, because does Gwen Stacy die in Ultimate Spider-Man?
Not as far as I read, although I think in Ultimate Spider-Man, she was like running away from her abusive.
No, wait,
is that wrong? Or I don't know. I don't. It's been a while.
No, she definitely was like wearing half shirts and stuff. She was all like,
look,
whatever.
There's so many different comic books.
Yeah.
And I know, I'm not saying it like, don't ask me these questions. I don't know. I don't know. It's ridiculous how many different like versions of characters.
Well, that's why I don't feel like they necessarily need to be tied into any one specific continuity. And that's why I'm kind of hoping that they don't necessarily make the decision to kill off Gwen Stacy. Like, just run with this story. You don't have to kill her just because that's what happens. But at some point, someone is going to bow to the fanboy community and say, well, they're going to be up in arms if we don't do this. So,
I mean, they sort of did that by killing off her, you know, Captain Stacy in this.
Right.
I mean, he didn't have to die.
Right, right.
It really happened because it happened in the comic books.
Right.
It was just he gets killed by the lizard and then he makes Peter promise.
Right. And
that's it. I mean, his death does not motivate anything. It's not, I mean, he could have asked Peter to stay away from his daughter if he'd lived.
Right.
She doesn't want revenge on anyone because it's just he just died because he died.
And it doesn't even necessarily motivate, you know, they're broken up for one scene, but literally in the next scene, he's basically saying.
Right, exactly. So it's sorry about your dead dad, but I really like his daughter.
I will say, though, that the moment that she figures out that he's Spider-Man, and then he like webs her and pulls her in for a kiss or whatever, she has this reaction on her face that is, to me, the best thing in the movie. I thought her reaction in that moment was so great. That was my favorite thing in the whole movie.
And I think the reason why I will say that, you know, Gwen Stacy works in the movie is because Emma Stone works so well.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, I don't feel like as a character they necessarily did anything that interesting. Everything that's good about it is just is Emma Stone.
Sure. I mean, and a lot of what's good about Spider-Man is Andrew Garfield.
Yeah.
I mean, I think those two together, you know, and in those roles make them work, you know, better perhaps than the material.
Yeah, I would agree. Should with that. Work. Yeah, definitely. Which is why I'm excited to see them in a better movie, you know?
Yeah. Very quickly, I will say I liked that they make reference to the Daily Bugle, but they don't try to cram in him, you know, working for them. Same with Norman Osborn. They reference him, obviously, for later movies, but they don't have to, like, didn't have to shake Peter's hand and say, "Hi, I'm Norman Osborn." There's always no Harry Osborn. I mean, they are, I don't know.
I completely agree. So. Yeah, that's good.
I wish they'd done more of it, but I really liked like some of the first-person swinging footage that they put in there.
Did you see the movie in 3D?
No.
Okay, I didn't either. I have no interest in it, but yeah.
But still, I mean, the shots were still in there in 2D.
Yeah. I just didn't know if they worked better in 3D. I have no idea.
Yeah, I don't know either. I will say I liked it. I recommend it. I think it has problems, but I think it's a pretty good Spider-Man movie.
Yeah.
I think it's certainly way better than the hate it's been getting online for, I think, what are relatively unfair reasons.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think people are a little bit bent out of shape for, like I said, I mean, the worst thing that I can say about it is that I'm a little bit indifferent towards it, but I certainly liked talking about it.
Yeah. So. And I'll also say that 6 months from now, I may not remember a thing from this movie. Yeah. I don't know that's going to stick with me, but I had fun in the theater.
Yeah, definitely. All right. Well, thank you very much, Eric. Thank you guys for listening. Remember, you can always email us your thoughts on The Amazing Spider-Man or whatever. You know, try to keep it movie related to fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. And we will see you guys next week.
With great podcasting comes great responsibility.